Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on a beautiful Tuesday afternoon, and we have a lot to talk about. As we talked a good bit of basketball yesterday. We're going to start things off here momentarily, checking in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, who is in Montgomery getting ready for Auburn and South Alabama baseball at the home of the Montgomery Biscuits. So we'll check in with Andy here momentarily. Dan is back after a successful night last night. What a second half for the Trojans last night.
You could really tell in the second half which one of these. Am I on?
No.
There you go. You could really tell in the second half. Hi, everybody. It's great to be back. You could really tell in the second half which of these teams played an extra game and which one of them didn't. The Trojans got the bye straight to the round of 32. And Chattanooga's a really good team, but they struggled, I think, with Troy's pace. They really lean heavily on a couple of starters. They have a girl who played. She was the only girl in D1 women's basketball, the only woman, who played 38 minutes a game or more. She averaged 38 minutes a game this year for Chattanooga. So they have a couple players that rarely come out. They got into foul trouble. And, yeah, Troy was able to seize control. They're back in the Super 16 of the WNIT for the second year in a row, and they're looking to hang another banner next to the Fab Four banner that hangs right now at Trojan Arena. So exciting times, and Thursday night we got the Mean Green.
Thursday night
we've got the
I saw multiple things last night that said Wednesday.
We're playing Thursday night against the. I think we had to wait till.
I need to get with Don because I saw that and it said.
Let me double check.
It said tomorrow when I checked. Today,
yeah, I'm pretty sure we drew.
I would hope night. You know what it is.
It'd be fun if I learned on the ice. Yeah, Thursday night.
Okay.
The Trojans are hosting,
I knew they were hosting North Texas.
North Texas coming to town. That should be a lot of fun. And the winner advances to the.
I was thinking that's awful quick to be turning around from a Monday night to a Wednesday.
Now
that's great.
Chattanooga did turn from Saturday to Monday.
Right.
So 2 days wouldn't be totally. But I think in this case there's plane travel involved and yeah, they're giving them a little more time. But yeah, we're going. We're going Thursday night at Trojan Arena.
All right. As I mentioned, we have the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us from Montgomery, where Auburn baseball will be taking on South Alabama. I love the fact that Auburn playing at different sites around the state, played up, you know, at the home of the Trash Pandas earlier. Now they're at the home of the Biscuits tonight and got South Alabama coming in.
They couldn't visit Stanky Field. Right, they have to play this one in Montgomery, and that's a gorgeous stadium.
Oh,
make
it
no
is.
Mistake.
It is.
I wonder if there's any plans to play at the new stadium in Columbus, right? With the new Braves.
I don't know.
The name of the affiliate escapes me. I really pushed for. I don't know if you remember this, Bill. I really pushed for the Cobbler. As the nickname for the Columbus affiliate,
you just all be food here in the South.
Well, it could be, or it could be a guy who makes shoes. I mean, you could take your pick there. But I guess Peach Cobbler would be the obvious connection. But anyways, yeah, no, it's really. I agree with you. It's very cool that Auburn is visiting different minor league stadiums around the state and taking the show on the road just to some other places.
Let's welcome in the voice of the Tigers back from a successful trip to Lexington this weekend. Andy Burcham joining us here on The Drive. Andy, how you doing?
I'm doing well. 2 points. I am not doing the game tonight.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Brad is doing that game solo. No, it's quite all right. I did Friday night. I did Thursday night basketball, Friday night baseball,
right.
And then Saturday basketball. And by the time that game was over, my voice was a little strained.
Oh, okay.
So we decided with travel tomorrow for basketball that I would take tonight off. And Brad will handle that like a champ, like he always does. It is the Columbus Clingstones.
And that has to do with the mining history, right?
No, oh. It has to do with the peach.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's the peach. Okay, that's right. Okay, that would make sense.
Cling-free or not. But if they were the cobblers, would Geppetto be the mascot?
See, that's what I mean. Yeah. See, now we're in business, Andy.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. I was close with peach stuff, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. It is the Columbus Clingstones.
Yeah, well, a few of these just take a little getting used to, and I'm sure it will seem cool later.
I think a lot of people have trouble getting used to the biscuits.
Yeah,
for a long time.
Yeah, but that has turned out great.
That seems to be just commonplace now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, now
they were pioneers in that field, right? I mean, without the biscuits, we wouldn't have the Jacksonville jumbo shrimp. We wouldn't have the Albuquerque moonlighting as the green chili cheeseburgers every once in a while, right, Andy? Like it's important stuff.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Minor league baseball, baby. It's always a little bit odd.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
timely, though, we're talking, I mean, not only is Auburn playing in a minor league stadium tonight, but it is the week of opening day. I mean, I know there were the games in Japan, but like the week of opening day for most teams in Major League Baseball is just a couple of days away.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to this weekend. Looking forward to tonight. Listening to Brad call that game against South Alabama, always a tough game for the Tigers. And this, I think, is the third straight year that they will have played South Alabama there in Montgomery. And then, of course, baseball gets ready for a trip to number 3 Georgia starting on Friday, and baseball or basketball, of course, getting ready for the Sweet 16 in Atlanta.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little more baseball in a little bit. But Georgia is they just demolished Florida this past weekend, so we'll get into that a little bit. But got to get to basketball. Auburn, after a lackluster first half against Alabama State, except for the final minute, which stretched it out to 10, played better in the second half. Really, I thought played well on Saturday. It was just the fact that Creighton had a couple of guys that were just almost unconscious, knocking down threes early on. But when you looked up and you realize they'd shot the ball so well, Janai only had, what did he have, 4 points at the half? He had either 2 or 4 points at the half, and they just led by 2, that Auburn was in good shape if they just kept on playing the way they were playing defensively. And then the guards really came through for the Tigers on Saturday.
Well, it really, Chad Baker-Mazar for the first 8 minutes of the second half was relentless at both ends of the floor for Auburn. Denver Jones put the clamps on Ashworth, the point guard, who's really a good player, by the way. Gosh, he's a good player. I know he's 25, but he can really play, and I think he played all 40 minutes of that game. And then Auburn was able to shut down the freshman, McAndrew, the 6'10 swing player out of Minnesota, in the second half as well. And not only did Auburn shut down Creighton's three-point shooting, they just didn't give them many shots, didn't give them many open looks in the second half. And then down the stretch, to Todd Pettiford one more time, and away from home primarily. That's the most uncanny thing about it to me, is what he has done for Auburn, and has done it in huge games. And there was none bigger than that one on Saturday, because the season's up for grabs at that point. But what he has done for Auburn, and done it away from Neville Arena. And he was, how many times did we see him at the top of the key split a double team and then either get a floating shot or dish the ball for Auburn? And, oh, by the way, a career-high 6 rebounds for Tahad as well. And Auburn wins a game where Janai does have a double in rebounds, had 12 rebounds, and rebounded well the entire ball game. In spite of the fact that Creighton, for the most part, had a 6'10 and a 7'2 center on the floor, but ends up in single digits scoring-wise, and yet Auburn pulls away and wins that ball game and now gets ready for a Michigan team Auburn really hasn't faced this kind of lineup this season, because Michigan has 7'1 and 7' on the inside that start and are the two leading scorers for Michigan as well. We've not seen that this year. It's going to be interesting to see how Auburn goes about and attacks this team defensively, and how does it defend this team at the other end of the floor?
Michigan seems uniquely experienced against Auburn, too, for a team that didn't play Auburn this season, because you have a former point guard at Auburn on the team. You have the big who played at Yale last year, who faced Auburn in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. I think there's, you know, there are a couple, you know, storylines abound in that game. Andy, I want to ask about post-game against Alabama State when Stephen Pearl took a blowtorch to his team's effort and energy and singled out Janai and Chad as players who absolutely needed to bring it against Creighton. And I think both of them emphatically, you know, received the message and responded on you know, on the court against the Jays. But what was that like talking to talking to the assistant, you know, talking to Steven after the game, and hearing what he had to say?
He came directly from the receive line, the hand, shaking hands with the other team, to us.
Hmm.
So there was no time in the locker room. There was no 10-minute cooling off period. There was no time with the team when he came to us. And he had to wait about a minute for our post-game, end of the game break, and then the start of the Regions Bank post-game show. And I could tell, I mean, I could just tell by his demeanor that he was not pleased with a 20-point. Well, that was the weird thing, is Auburn won by 20. Really, the game was never in question for Auburn. That was never the question. But how was Auburn playing? And Auburn was not playing up to the standard that he, that his head coach, that a lot of these team members believed that it needed to win against Creighton on Saturday. And he did not hold anything back against the team, Janai, Chad, anybody, on that post-game show on Saturday. And I'll be honest with you, it's one of those things where you want to let the man talk. I want him to be honest, and he was. There were also things, I also wanted to bring out some of the positives from the game. I thought the game that Tahad had and the game that Cheney had, and both of those guys had struggled in their last games. But there's no question that what the message was. And from what I gather, it was the same message in the postgame with the head coach and the same message that Dylan Cardwell gave to the team a day later. And then I think that team took everything to heart and played much different against Creighton. Still just trailed by two at the half. But then in that second half, I mean, just really put it all together. And so it was fascinating to watch that dynamic of the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament win by 20, and yet you don't feel real good about that win other than you are moving on and you get a shot at Creighton. And I thought that the telling comment that he had, Bruce Pearl had it with the media after the game as well. And my guess is, I don't know this for sure, but Bruce told this to his team in the locker room. Auburn played better in the loss to Yale last year in the first round of the NCAA tournament than it did in that 20-point win against Alabama State on Thursday.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't disagree with that, Andy. I mean, but you could see it. That's the thing. You know, when we talked last week, I think we were all expecting Auburn to come out with a lot of intensity against Alabama State, and that's not what we saw. And that's what the big concern was. Like, look, you can't just go through the motions here in the NCAA tournament. They were very fortunate that they were that much more talented than Alabama State, because you saw, even when they were playing well, when a team like, you know, when Creighton's got a couple of guys lighting it up, you can still be in trouble. So I think that is a big, big lesson learned.
I think that I'm glad you mentioned the Creighton game, because I think the fact that Creighton had looked so impressive against Louisville probably played a role in the concern, and they'd done it right in front of these coaches, right? Like I don't know who had the scout for the Creighton game, But that coach
Stephen Pearl had this guy.
Oh, yep. Well, you know what? That probably played a role in his
comments post game.
I've been around long enough. Okay, if he had to go watch that Louisville game again, and you know, scout and then watch his team and try to get ready. So I could see why that bled into what he had to say to you. I'm glad you mentioned Dylan, because his job handling Kalkbrenner, who's one of the most accomplished.
Dylan played fabulous defensively.
I thought he more than held his own in that matchup, and it was a vital part of Auburn being able to win.
Well, and they're going to have to do the same thing this week
against
Michigan, because Auburn gets two bigs like Kalkbrenner on Saturday. Danny Wolf, who Bill mentioned, played for Yale a year ago at 7 foot and a junior, is the second leading scorer on this team. And then Vatislav Golden, who transferred with Dusty May, the head coach, from Florida Atlantic, and is the leading scorer on this team at 16.8 points a ball game. Both of these guys are averaging 10 points a game in the ten rebounds a game apiece in the NCAA tournament. They're both big guys. I mean, they're both 7'1", 250 pounds. Wolf is a junior, Golden is a grad student, so these guys are upperclassmen. Wolf's been on a team that beat Auburn in the NCAA tournament. They're not worried at all about playing Auburn, and you know Trey Donaldson wants a shot
right
against his former team, where he wasn't a starter, has been a starter all year long for Michigan, has had a terrific year for Trey and this Michigan ball club. So there's a lot of intrigue with this ball game that's going to take place late, and that's another wrinkle.
It is.
For Auburn, I mean, it's a late game. It's even later for Michigan. I think they're on Eastern time. Maybe they're not on the Eastern time zone. Regardless, it's an 8:39 start time in Atlanta Central time.
That's on
Friday night.
Yeah, if. There's no way you know it's going to be 8:39, because the game before is 6:09, and the games are lasting 2.5 hours now.
Right.
So yeah, you'll be closer to 9 o'clock, if not 9. Starting that ball game.
That means we'll have an hour-long pregame show then, because we're going on the air.
Well, there's plenty to talk about. There really is. But what a matchup this one is, as you said. And obviously, keys for Auburn. I mean, Auburn's been going with that big lineup to start, start halves, the opening half and then the second half. Auburn's going to need Dylan and Janai on the court, maybe more than we usually see them, and that means they got to avoid fouls.
Well, and I thought they did a good job of that in the first two games. And I thought the officials, for the most part, let them play in the first two games. Who knows what happens on Friday? You know, who knows how those games are called? But I think for Auburn to win the ball game, Dylan and Janai have to stay in the game.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
To match up with Wolf and Golden. And there's another wrinkle to this. Namari Burnett, who is a 6'5 grad student out of Chicago, has played against Auburn with Alabama. So, man, there's all kinds of intrigue with this game.
And the director of basketball operations is a familiar name.
A.T. Harrell.
Yeah.
There you go. So, I mean, there's all kinds of familiarity with this ball game. On Friday. And then the winner gets either Ole Miss, who Auburn will be playing for a fourth time, or Michigan State, which is a perennial Final Four participant. So it should be two great Sweet 16 games Friday in Atlanta, and then regardless of the matchup on Sunday, should be just a terrific matchup. And I'm certainly pulling for Auburn to be on there Sunday and with a chance to make his second ever Final Four appearance.
I would assume that Denver saw Dusty May and Florida Atlantic a couple of times in his season at FIU before coming to Auburn as well, so they're probably familiar.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, for everybody on this roster, other than Chaney Johnson, this is uncharted territory. And Chaney has been to the Sweet 16, but in Division II. So for Auburn, this is new. These guys, this is new for these guys. For the most part, Michigan's in the same boat. And this is a team that a year ago was last in the Big Ten And now they're in the Sweet 16 in the first year under Dusty May. So there are stories galore with this one on Friday.
Well, one thing that should be a positive for Auburn is there's going to be a lot of orange there in the stands. Auburn fans have, some couldn't make it to Lexington or opted to, hope that Auburn made it to Atlanta. Maybe not able to go to both weekends, but there are going to be a ton of Auburn fans in Atlanta.
Yeah, it should be. And listen, it was when Auburn played against Ohio State back in December in the Holiday Hoopsgiving, that was an Auburn home game. Mm-hmm. It was amazing how many Auburn people were there. These tickets are much tougher to get. And on the secondary market, they're astronomical prices right now just to get in the building.
That's right.
For this one. If you go to SeatGeek or whatever secondary market that you find, SeatGeek, the official ticketing partner of the Auburn Tigers. But, I hope Auburn fans already have their tickets and are getting ready to make that trip. And it being Atlanta, you don't even have to spend the night in Atlanta. You can drive back and forth. And I know some folks are planning to do that. So it should be a big Auburn crowd at State Farm Arena on Friday night, and when the Tigers make it to Sunday, I would expect an even bigger crowd. And back to crowds, to me, one of the most impressive things about that Creighton team was what it did in front of at least 16,000 Louisville fans in that first-round NCAA tournament game. Bill, Dan, it was Louisville red all throughout that building. And that Creighton ball club just dismantled Louisville from start to finish. And then for Auburn to come out and then do that against that Creighton team that had such a good first half against the Tigers, I thought was all the more impressive.
And, in a tournament that thus far, that there haven't been that many upsets. I mean, Arkansas is the longest shot or the lowest seed that is there. But, anybody who's watched Arkansas knows their talent. You've had an awful lot of chalk through this tournament thus far.
Well, that Arkansas team is a little bit better than the team that Auburn saw because Boogie Bland is back.
That is right.
At point guard. They not only have more depth now, but they have a guy that was going to make a run at freshman of the year in the country in Boogie Bland until that hand injury. So he's come back at the most important time for Arkansas, and we know what John Calipari can do as a head coach, and that team is full of talent. It's just not deep. And you wonder if that's ever going to be a factor from now on because they're playing very, very good teams now. Mm-hmm. And hats off to them for making yet another run in the NCAA tournament with a team that, started 0-5?
0-5 in league play.
Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Auburn's got to, I don't know that I have seen this officially, but there can't be a team that is that has done what Auburn has done when they're in the Sweet 16 and they played 9 of the other 15 teams and they have 9 victories against other teams that they're in the Sweet 16 with.
Well, and the only team that has beaten them, the only team that has a winning record against Auburn in that group, two.
Duke and Florida.
Duke. Mm-hmm. That's it. But nobody has played the schedule that Auburn has played. And I hope that pays off for this. I think it already has paid off. I think it's one of the reasons that this Auburn team is the number one overall seed, was not only did it play this schedule, but has been successful against the schedule that it played this season.
Talking with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. We're just doing an extended segment with Andy here as we try to not stress his vocal cords too much as he's got to rest them for this weekend. But I want to get some quick thoughts on baseball because that was big. The Tigers being able to win that series in a crazy one there on Saturday as well. To be able to pull that one out, but to win the first two and now be 4-2 in conference play is a great start for Auburn and something they really needed.
Auburn has won 4 consecutive Southeastern Conference series because it won the last two a year ago against Missouri and Alabama, and it's won the first two this year. As a matter of fact, starting with that Missouri series last year, Auburn hasn't lost a weekend series since in the SEC or out of the SEC.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
To win the game as it did on Friday with two outs in the top of the ninth, trailing by a run, the double to left by Frelick that tied it, and then to win that game on a pop fly in the infield by Ike Irish that was dropped by the shortstop. But credit Cole Edwards, who was running on the play with two outs, and he scored without a throw home, and that gave Auburn the lead. And then Ryan Hetzler came in and set down Kentucky in order, and to win that second straight Friday game in the SEC. And then Saturday was even more crazy.
Yeah.
With some calls that were made and that weren't made, and Ike Irish with five hits in the game, including home runs in his last two at-bats. He is the and Butch Thompson told me this today when we recorded this week in Auburn Baseball. He is the first player in an SEC game to record five hits in that game since 2011.
Wow.
How about that?
That is that's hard to believe. I mean, you would think somebody
first time in 14 years that someone has done that in an SEC game. But it's good to have him back in the lineup, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, no question.
For Auburn or in the conference?
In the conference.
Wow.
In the conference.
Yeah.
Man, which I'm amazed at because there have been some pretty good hitters
over
the last 14 years in the SEC.
No kidding. And Georgia's got a few this year. They don't have Charlie Condon anymore. But my goodness, they have been they have been pounding the ball, and they pounded the Gators in Gainesville this past weekend.
Yeah, they're hitting the ball all over the ballpark, and they're hitting with power, and they'll do that at Foley Field in Athens, which is I think it's a hitter's ballpark. And this may be a weekend where Auburn's got to go in and win, score double digit runs.
Yeah.
And still may not win.
Outscore them. Hope. Yep.
I mean, Kentucky lost that series at Georgia and scored 26 runs. So, yeah, this is a weekend that could be wild and woolly in Athens. And it's one of those weekends, because that Georgia team's ranked number 3, I think, in the country right now. It's one of those weekends where you're going to learn about your ball club. Because with as many Auburn freshmen and as talented as they are, they've not been tested yet like this Georgia team will test them this weekend.
No. We were talking, I don't guess it's in your plans, but there's some Auburn fans that are thinking about making the run up the road to Athens and back between Atlanta and Athens for basketball and baseball.
Jason will be covering with Brad all weekend long in Athens. As tempting as it is for me to make that Saturday jaunt to Athens, it's probably responsible of me just not to make that and get ready for Sunday. And I hope that's the case.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Quickly, you were over there. I had to leave before the introductory press conference for Larry Vincent yesterday. Yeah. Your quick thoughts. Did you get a chance to meet him?
I did. He has to be the tallest head coach in Auburn University history at 6'8".
That I can recall. Yes. Yeah.
And I thought he was really impressive in how he kind of outlined how he's going to put this program back together. And, I think there's been a lot of talk out there about some of the high profile Auburn players that have decided to look into the transfer portal. There were a lot of those players that were at that press conference yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to recruit his own team and recruit new kids to come in. And my guess is that's the most immediate need of this Auburn ball club, hiring a staff as well and hit the ground running because the transfer portal is open.
That's right.
As we know, the transfer portal for basketball is now open for both men and women. And he's got to put a team together. I like what he said about putting the team. I like what he said about being innovative, not only offensively and defensively. So he said the right things about the student athlete and caring for those kids, those young women on and off the floor at Auburn. I love the fact that he referenced the creed. And he did that in without a question. I mean, that was part of his introduction to Auburn. He comes in, he makes a big step up from Norfolk State, in spite of the fact that that team won 30 games this year, including beating Auburn in Auburn. It's a big step into the Southeastern Conference.
No question.
How well he makes that step and how quickly he makes that step is, I think, one of the keys for Coach Vickers early on in this season. But he's been a winner at Norfolk State, including 30 wins this year. And 30 wins, and I don't care where you've won 30 games, you've done something right if you won 30 ball games mm-hmm. in Division I college basketball. And now he's got to translate that not only to a Power Four, but one of the very best conferences in the country, as we say in just about every sport about the Southeastern Conference.
You're absolutely right about that. Andy, I really appreciate it. Go ahead and run down for everybody the schedule there with the Auburn Sports Network here over the next week or so.
Auburn baseball tonight at 6 from Riverwalk Stadium. Brad will have the call on Wings 94.3 starting at 5:45. We will have a special edition of Tiger Talk from the West in Peachtree City Thursday evening at 6 on Wings 94.3. We're working on the lineup right now, but obviously it will include Auburn basketball and others on the eve of Auburn's NCAA Sweet 16 matchup with Michigan. Auburn baseball on the road this weekend at Georgia, and that is a 5 o'clock start on Friday, a 3 o'clock start on Saturday, and a noontime start on Sunday. That Friday game will be right here. As a matter of fact, it's going to cut into your show on Friday, 4:45, the broadcast on ESPN 106.7. Saturday is back on the network at 2:45. And then Sunday, we don't know the schedule
right
now for Auburn basketball. But that baseball game will begin at 12. Brad and Jason all weekend long from Athens. As mentioned, Tiger Talk Saturday or Thursday night at 6 from the Westin at Peachtree City. And then Friday night at right now, the tip time is scheduled for 8:39-ish. We'll be on the air at 8 o'clock from State Farm Arena as Randall Dickey and Jacob Hillman join me for that call of that Sweet 16 matchup. Auburn's first Sweet 16 since that magic run to the Final Four in 2019.
Yep. Well, I hope the vocal cords are well rested and get plenty of opportunity throughout the weekend, you know, into Sunday, and then we're talking to you next Monday as you're making plans to head to San Antonio.
That is the plan, Bill. That is the plan.
All right, Andy. Thanks a lot, man. We really appreciate you spending some time with us, and look forward to it. Good luck all week.
All right, Bill. Bill, Dan, have a great day, guys. War Eagle.
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here in the opening extended segment. We're going to open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind? Hey, there's some football to talk about as well. Auburn had a viewing window today, first day in pads for Auburn football. We spent a little time with Hugh Freeze as well. So quite a few things we can talk about. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast.
Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill had to step aside for a second. He'll be back shortly. Drew at the controls. Big thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us in the first half of hour number one. You can catch all of that on the podcast, ESPNAU.com, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. You'll find the show that way. Andy Burcham, of course, busy this week. He's not calling the game tonight. He told us about that game in Montgomery, Auburn and South Alabama. You can catch that on Wings 94.3. But he will be in Atlanta on Friday night, late night Friday night, Auburn and Michigan. Bruce Pearl in the Sweet 16 for the second time as Auburn head coach, looking to go to the Final Four for the second time as Auburn head coach. Auburn needs to advance to the Elite Eight, and then if they win on Friday, they're playing on Sunday. Auburn is you can shop around. Auburn 8-9 point favorite, depending on where you look, against Michigan on Friday night. Most of the
As a matter of fact, Auburn and Duke, the
The biggest favorites.
Biggest favorites are about 8.5 each.
And all four of the higher seeded SEC teams are favored in those matchups. Mm-hmm. I believe St. John's, or not St. Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Kentucky might be underdogs.
Somebody has to be. I mean, Kentucky or Tennessee does.
That's
Kentucky's
true, yeah.
beaten Tennessee
yeah.
twice.
That's true, yeah. I guess I forgot there was an SEC matchup.
You only have one, so you could have six SEC teams in the Elite Eight.
Conceivably, yeah. Ole Miss and a couple of matchups between SEC teams, which you would have to have there. But Ole Miss and Arkansas are the only real underdogs, and Arkansas was an underdog against St. John's.
Yeah, they were.
Didn't stop them at all. They carved St. John's, and that was one that I thought. And I've missed on a couple of upset picks in this bracket thing too. But I looked at that matchup immediately. Jason Caldwell too, to his credit. Although I think he may have believed in St. John's a little bit more as a tournament team this year, but you know we'll talk to him whenever we talk to him. But the Arkansas St. John's matchup in round two really stood out as is St. John's going to be able to? Are they going to be able to handle Arkansas off the bounce? Are they going to be able to stay in front of Arkansas for 40 minutes? Are they going to be able to win some of these physical matchups, especially with Boogie Flan back? Arkansas, we wondered if they were underseeded, right, relative to their talent.
Yeah, and here as far as their talent.
And here they are in the Sweet 16. Yeah, they deserve to be a 10 seed based on the season they had, but they earned their way into the Sweet 16, and I don't think it'd be shocking at all to see them play Texas Tech really tough when those two teams square off.
And it didn't hurt Arkansas when Rick Pitino decided to sit R.J. Lewis for the last 4-plus minutes of the ball game either.
Sure, although R.J. Lewis wasn't helping things by missing shot after
shot in the basketball game either. But how many teams sit their best player for that entire time?
No, I understand. I also would understand, though, Rick Pitino looking at it and saying this guy's 3 of 17 and really struggling, and the body language was the bigger concern than the way he was performing. I mean, you have multiple St. John's players having to try to fire this guy up during the game, trying to give him pep talks and things. At some point, you pull the plug. You think
you wish in retrospect or in hindsight, you probably wish you'd sat him earlier and then been able to see if he could do something there at the very end.
That's got to be when you have a jump shooter, primarily like a jump shot type scorer. When he's been great for a stretch and then he's cold, it's got to be a really tough decision as far as what to do as a coach. Yep. As far as do you let him, especially in a when
the season's over if you lose.
Yes, when it's a game that decides if you keep playing this season, do you roll with that guy because he's been. He's been able to pull through in most situations, or do you say? I guess it's like a manager with a pitcher, right? Like at what point in a if it's game seven and you got your ace out there and he's struggling, how
long before you pull him?
How long before you? Well, Rick Pitino saw enough, and he waited.
It was pretty late before he pulled him.
Well, late hook, right? It was
but they did have a lead when he pulled him.
They did, and he was really.
It was
Arkansas. I mean, just that was another one of those games, Bill, kind of like Creighton Louisville, where a couple of minutes in, you said, there are a couple of mismatches out there. There are a couple of things where, I mean, St. John's was chasing around. And there was some of that in Creighton-Auburn as far as in the second half. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Creighton was really struggling to stay in front of Auburn's backcourt, and Auburn was beating them off the bounce. Like, you didn't see Auburn beat a lot of SEC teams this year off the bounce as the game wore on. And now Auburn prepares for, like we were saying with Andy, a matchup with Michigan that's full of storylines.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a little different, and you know, you might think, well, you just played a team that's got two big guys, and you played Florida that has multiple big guys, but this matchup here with Michigan, it's like there is a 7-foot true center, and then there's a 7-foot shooter.
Yeah.
And a 7-foot, like three almost, is what they have.
Well, and Auburn's seen some tall jump shooters this
year.
They
have, but they haven't seen teams that had that and a seven and a guy that was a 7-foot.
Well, the team you just saw has McAndrew, who rarely goes inside. McAndrew's a 6'10", 6'11", jump shooter on the outside.
And then he doesn't average 10 rebounds.
He doesn't, exactly. He's not.
That's the difference.
Yeah, you have a sort of an inside-out power forward at that height, along with a true center. I would say that Creighton had a stretch four from the outside.
Yeah, that's right. He was more a three. He was really more a three.
Yeah, or a really tall three, as opposed to a what you're talking about, which you don't see. You don't see a lot of that in college basketball.
No, you don't.
You know what? I think Auburn with Dylan and Janai is one of the closer things to that in major college basketball.
It is, although, I mean, Janai's not going to just sit out there and be shooting threes mostly. So
if he is, then it could be a Rick Pitino situation.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't be the optimal situation.
Bruce Pearl could be calling Rick Pitino asking, what are you doing in that situation? I mean, no, because you're right. I mean, that's something Janai has developed over the last couple of years to – in order to make it even harder for, like, his passing, it makes it even harder to defend him as a matchup. And so, you know, I think teams look at it as a relief when Bruce, you know, you heard this after the Alabama State game, when Auburn's bigs are willing to settle for outside shots, it's a relief for the other team, even if they hit them, because they probably aren't going to hit them they aren't going to sustain a high percentage of those based on the evidence you have this season. And also, it takes Auburn's best rebounders away from the basket. And also, if Auburn's bigs are shooting deep jumpers, then that's, I mean, you think about every possible outcome for a possession, right? Like, who could shoot it and from where? And if you're an opposing defense having to decide, okay, well, who do you want to shoot for Auburn and where do you want to shoot it from? I feel like your first choice is going to be an Auburn big shooting from the outside.
Oh, absolutely, any of them.
So you're almost playing into, like, you're giving the defense what they want when that happens, even when you hit them. And that's not to say Janai and or Chaney shouldn't take the occasional.
Should never take the open three.
Right, but like we were seeing against when a huge percentage of this Auburn team's offense...
Oh, almost 60% of their shots were threes.
Yeah, when the attempts are coming from the outside, maybe there are defenses where that would be justified for this Auburn team, right? Like, maybe there are defenses that are so good around the basket that that's something worth a try. But in general, you know, you want to see paint touches with this Auburn team, especially. I mean, if the guards can get there, that's great. But if it's Janai and it's Dylan and it's Chaney, you know, that's ideal.
334-321-1390. Love your thoughts on the tournament. Now here with the Sweet 16, we can talk some baseball, and as I mentioned, we can talk a little football as well. As Hugh Freeze met with the media today, we got a chance to watch a little of the first day in pads. And yes, they look good, but I mean, they're going against air, or they had a little 11-on-11.
Anyone in particular? How about this?
Eric Singleton.
I was going to say who caught your eye, and we'll talk about that
We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive, 488-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in here in hour number two of the drive, which is brought to you as usual by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. You can call us on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you get your favorite podcasts. And so big thanks to Southeastern Industrial Contractors. I would encourage you to check out hour number one on the podcast if you missed it, with our guy Andy Burcham.
Oh yes, voice of the Tigers, joined us for a half hour there at the start.
And he was phenomenal, as he always is. Had a lot of cool stories. I thought the stuff about Stephen Pearl and the story, the behind the scenes of that now, I'll tell you what. If Auburn concludes this run with a championship, that Stephen Pearl post game
is gold.
Yeah, it's like it's like the Tebow press conference, right? Like, it's the coaching equivalent of that. Like, he went out there and said plainly, And we should probably track down the clip if we can. But like, he went out there and just told, you know, he said it like it is, you know, that it was Chaney and Janai that he singled out as guys that needed to play up to their own standard. Right, it wasn't as though it was something he thought they were incapable of doing, but it was, you know, they couldn't let this opportunity slip away because they didn't try hard enough, and the thought that, I mean, it you know, especially, and the fact that he was the scout for Creighton, right? Like the fact that he had just watched Creighton play.
Yeah, and knowing that if Auburn played like that, it wouldn't look good for him.
Yeah,
he was the scout for a game that Auburn could have been destroyed if they played the way they did.
It felt like a Columbo episode when Andy revealed that, right? Because it suddenly is like, oh.
Yeah, he came straight from the handshake line.
Yeah, he came.
Had not spoken with anybody on the staff or his players or anything. And came right over, sat there, and then had to wait. Andy also said he had to wait about a minute. So he's sitting there stewing.
While Andy recaps the game and does some ad reads. But, yeah, no, keep in mind, and even some more context, Bill, he had watched from courtside as Creighton dismantled Louisville. Like, if you're a scout.
And they showed him. I remember seeing him in the stands.
You've got an excellent seat as the coach of the opposing team in these tournaments to watch and scout your opponent. And so, yeah, I can understand why things were urgent for Coach Pearl, Coach Stephen Pearl in the postgame press conference after Alabama State. And I could see why. It was quite the contrast from Bruce Pearl a couple of weeks earlier, laughing off the idea that things were panicked. Right, like things had become very urgent. Right, you know, and it's a song you'll hear on, you'll hear some Foreigner. You'll hear some Foreigner on Wings 94.3, and things had gotten urgent. So yeah, Auburn now in the Sweet 16 after a return to form against Creighton. Like that was the way they were beating top teams in the SEC.
Yeah, pretty much so. Except Janai didn't. You know, you didn't see Janai scoring the way he usually does, but the way that they did, yes, looked much more like Auburn when they were rolling.
And you mentioned it a little bit, Tahad down the stretch, right? Like how huge was it to have? And it's a cliche, but it's true. Like you're 30 something games into your career, like you're a freshman in name only at this point in college basketball. But Tahad is still someone in his first year of college basketball, and he is. He is just his ability to take over a game and do it against in huge moments over and over again. It's something really special.
Yeah, his ability to split a couple of defenders and be able to get into the lane and then he's got such a great little just soft floater that he goes with the right hand with a lot of the time, and you know he's left-handed.
No, the runner game, the floater game, the catch and shoot game. He can create his own shot off the dribble, like Todd's, and then of course his capability as a passer, right? Like so, I mean this is a guy who's it's a really special set of skills, and you know it's just we've mentioned it before. It's got to be. It must have been tough for Pegues too. Like when you think about this group of tight-knit guys from last year coming back minus a point guard, Trey leaves, Aiden leaves, it's pretty wide open. It must have been tough on any point guard to settle into that group with, especially when you think about the starting unit being, I mean, Miles is new too, but it's a little different because I don't know, his role, you know, he wasn't getting the ball as much, but I think his role was pretty similar to what he was doing at Georgia Tech. When you're
he's just not having to be the guy,
right? But when you're thinking about like either JP coming in from Furman or Tahad coming in out of high school, like to be able to hold your own with veterans who have played together and been through the fire, like it must have been extremely difficult to prove that you belong out there with these guys, and Tahad did it from. I mean, you think about that Houston game, right? Like the first week of the season.
Yeah, 20-plus.
Tahad was out there hitting big shots when Auburn was trailing against a top-five team, a team that ended up being a one seed in this NCAA tournament. So it's we've seen glimpses of it, extended glimpses of it all season, And I think Auburn's going to need more of that, you know, of Tahad's ability to be the moment. Tahad's ability to be, Tahad's ability to when things get urgent, right? Like his ability to step in and be
the thing is how
a jukebox hero.
Cool, he stays. You know, yeah. He's as cold as ice.
There he is. He's as cold as ice, Phil.
I'm gonna go with it. But he, fortunately, his shooting is not. I mean, that's the thing.
Todd Blooded is his shooting.
That's it. That's right. Oh. We'll do the whole hour of Farner.
Wings 94.3 is one of our favorite stations.
I saw some things, and when Andy was talking about, you know, the transfer portal being open for everybody. Michigan has a player that's hopped in the portal.
700 or so players took advantage of. By the way, we joked about
Is saying there's over 1,000 already.
Yeah,
right now.
You had a player jump in at like 6, at like a 7 Eastern yesterday morning, right? And you know somebody on the very tip of the East Coast who jumped in like right when that school. I guess someone got to work that day at the school. It was the first one, and they
here's the paperwork. Put it in.
They put that player in, and then within 12 or 15 hours, there were more than 700 other Division I men's basketball players who had announced they were in the transfer portal. That doesn't include the people that had jumped in amid coaching changes. Mm-hmm. And things like that, but it is, it's absolutely wild, and it's almost. I said this on the Doug Show yesterday. It's almost a rite of passage if you win Conference Player of the Year at a mid-major, like if you are the Conference Player of the Year in the A-Sun or the MEAC or the Sun Belt. It's very surprising if you don't go.
If you're not in, people are wondering, you know, what's up.
Yeah, you're usually in the portal, and if the numbers are being reported are true.
Did you see some of those things that Naco said early today? It said that Louisville, Pete Nakos of On3 reported that Louisville is prepared to spend up to $10 million in the transfer portal for next year's team. So they've got $10 million right now ready to spend on new players. And Kevin Willard, Maryland, Nakos also reporting that Maryland head coach Kevin Willard said he's had players asking for $3 million.
I've heard the $2 to $3 million number from John Fanta as well, but on the $10 million number, like let's think about that for a second. Is there a between the value of having a winning program, you know, the airtime that comes with having a winning program, with the economic impact to the area of Louisville, if that arena's full and
it's
people are in the,
worth
in
a
the
$10
building.
Million investment.
I'm wondering, I mean, then there's also probably, you know, eccentric millionaire and billionaire fans that are willing to kick in, not to mention the NBA players that Louisville has produced over the last 10, 15 years that might want to be, or longer, that might want to get involved in a resurgence of that program. Like it's a jarring number at first, Bill, but then it's like between the different people that could stand to benefit if the program is consistently at the top, it reminds me of when people sort of were shocked at what Nick Saban was making.
Right.
Like it's like, well, it is a lot of money, but think about what could. Like it costs a lot of money to mine for gold too, but then if you strike it, it's worth it. Yeah,
yes.
But then if you find it, like it, you have a bunch of gold, and so I think with Louisville, it's a sign of the times, if anything, that a school that wants to compete. And you know what? If you're Louisville, you're looking at the state of the ACC right now, and you're saying, like, how close are we to being a superpower in this league if we can upgrade? How many other schools in the ACC are taking that kind of initiative with their rosters? Will Wade might. Like Will Wade's in the ACC now, and he might, but that's, I mean, that is
will he have that kind of money at his disposal?
He's probably making, you know what? I would think that was a question he asked before he took the job.
I would sure think.
Like knowing Will
How
Wade
much, yes.
and sure enough, Bill, just like
God, who were the players the other day in the post game that were asked about why they trust their coach?
Because Will Wade signs the, was it the Arizona coach? I forget who it was.
I don't remember, I mentioned it yesterday where the player said, I wasn't on the air, but I told somebody when I saw that, the player said, they trust their coach because he paid him what he promised. And it's like, that's just unbelievable to think. a few years ago, if something like that had been in a post game, it would have. Oh no! Now it's like, well, good. That's what they should do.
Right, and even if it's not directly like the coach isn't the one with his name on the paycheck, but it was, and I think it was Derek Queen, the Maryland player who hit the buzzer beater, who said, "Well, the coach pays us the money, right? Like that's." That's why they listen to coach or whatever. But no, it is. Isn't it interesting, Bill, that Will Wade and Sean Miller are both back in major conference college basketball?
It's not surprising with the way things have changed in college athletics.
It's if you've ever seen Quiz Show from the 90s, they talk about they're trying to clean up the TV industry, and at the end, Martin Scorsese is in it in a rare acting appearance, and he talks about how what's going to happen is some low level people are going to get swept away, but the really powerful people are going to protect each other, and they'll get another chance in this industry very soon. And sure enough, that's what ended up happening. Right. And I look at Will Wade, and nothing against Will Wade or Sean Miller, because I think that they would both tell you, like Hugh Freeze during the Ole Miss scandal,
that hey, it was going on.
This was the lay of the land at the time, and there were a lot of places indulging in this sort of thing. And the fact that, you know, I think that if it were truly all that heinous, the industry would have blackballed them, right? And the fact that they're still not only in the business, but Will Wade's going to catch
up.
Will Wade's
back up.
Will Wade's in the ACC, and Sean Miller is
in the SEC. He's in Texas.
Yeah, he's in a couple of places where you talk about what Louisville's going to spend. Like, I think part of the reason they need to spend that is because there are some other places that look at
Texas has the wherewithal to be immediately. Viable.
You don't assemble this year's Texas roster without.
No, you're right. This year's Texas roster should have done better than it did.
Well,
that's one of the reasons that Sean Miller is now the head coach.
I think there's the belief that Sean Miller can keep having rosters like that,
at least as good as that.
And then they can also maybe, and he can also maybe get more out of his players than Coach Terry did.
334-321-1390. Let's get to the drive hotline. Yellowhammer is up. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon. So I was playing Michigan on Thursday, and I was just wondering, I hope you have already done this. Friday?
Yes.
I thought it was on Thursday.
No, last week was Thursday, Saturday. They've got the Friday, Sunday bracket this week.
Well, I thought I looked on the computer, and it was like 9:30 at night.
It is 9:39 Eastern time, but it's Friday night.
Okay, well, heck, I'm glad I...
That's all right. I had Dan's schedule messed up, so I mean,
it's better. You know what? It's better.
Be a day early.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's better. You find out. You know, you don't want to spend all week thinking the game's on Friday,
and then miss it,
and then find out it's on Thursday too late.
This is a good point you made. Yeah, I've been saved. But here's the thing: I just wondered if you'd just do a brief little synopsis about Michigan. What have they done of note, and what do we got to worry about, and all that kind of stuff.
Well, Michigan they were terrible last year.
It's a state bordering Canada.
Yeah, yeah.
They got the Great Lakes up there.
They had Juwan Howard as their head coach, the former Michigan star.
Part of the Fab Five.
Yeah, and things just did not go well. They finished. Did they finish last in the Big Ten?
No, they went. He had success early.
Early
right, in his tenure.
But last year, no.
In fact, they went to the Final Four the year before Auburn did, as a matter of fact. Their most recent Final Four appearance back in 2018. Mm-hmm. I think that there was optimism after that Juwan Howard would be able to keep things consistently good and even great at Michigan. Because I think a little bit like there are multiple schools in the SEC you could say this about, but we've talked so much about Texas and Oklahoma. Like if you're not near the top of the conference in a sport at Texas or Oklahoma – you're not going to get that long to stay. Like you don't get to stay at the bottom in a sport. And I would say Michigan is like that in practically every sport in the Big Ten, but especially men's basketball. Like they're not going to linger at the bottom for long. And even though Juwan Howard was an alum and was a beloved figure for what he did as a player and took them to the Final Four as a coach, they made the decision to go with somebody who had more of a track record as a college basketball coach. They went and get the a highly successful coach from Florida Atlantic who went to the Final Four 2 years ago, Dusty May. He brings a player with him, Golden. Do I have that right? Yeah.
Yes.
Who's coming with him from FAU, a big
seven-footer from FAU who had taken to the Final Four. Dusty May is a guy that's familiar with the Southeast as well. Even though he's from Indiana, but he played at Eastern Michigan. But he was an assistant at UAB under Mike White. He was an assistant at Florida. Mike White was the assistant for Mike White at Florida and Louisiana Tech. But Mike Davis at UAB. So he'd been at UAB, he'd been at Florida, he'd been at Louisiana Tech, got the head job at Florida Atlantic and did a tremendous job with them, taking them to the Final Four. And he has Auburn's transfer from Auburn and Trey Donaldson starting at point guard. He already had he brought in a 7-footer that transferred in from Yale that Auburn played last year when they were eliminated from the NCAA tournament, and that's Danny Wolfe, and then another 7-footer. That Dan mentioned, Golden, who came in from Florida Atlantic. So they've got a pair of 7-footers. One is really a true center. The other one's really a power forward who can shoot it as well. They're both averaging. They're their leading scorers. They're averaging. They're both averaging 10 rebounds a game here in the NCAA tournament. And they had a tremendous turnaround this year, going from really disappointing last year to competing. I think they finished third in the Big Ten, and they won 24-25 ball games. And they're going to be quite the challenge for Auburn with their 2 7-footers. Auburn, of course, goes big with Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell, but they don't usually play them more than 10 to 15 minutes a ball game. I think they're going to need them more than that against those two Michigan 7-footers.
They're going to win the rebound stat, aren't they?
It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to out-rebound them. Yes.
Although Auburn's guards are a big part of Auburn's rebounding attack. It's not just what they do with the bigs. Not just about Dylan and Chaney and Jani. I think Auburn, and that was part of the Chad's slump, was that he had been a non-factor as a rebounder for 4 or 5 games, and he really gets after it. And that's one of the signs that he's maybe snapping out of it. So no, I think that's going to be. It's interesting you bring that up, because that's going to be. I think that's going to be an important stat in seeing how this game plays out. Because if Michigan has a clear advantage on the boards, then I think you're going to get, at the very least for Auburn, you're going to get a close game, and maybe you're going to get a game that doesn't go the way you want.
Ooh. All right. Well. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yep, Yellowhammer. That's what can happen in the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
You're not going to be playing a whole lot of teams that you just have huge advantages.
Yeah, but if you're getting destroyed on the boards, right? Like your other margins, like the other ways you can win. Your path narrows, and so that's something Auburn, like, at the very
shoot lights out.
At the very least, Auburn's got to be competitive, and I think they can be. Like, to make no mistake, like Auburn's got the bigs. It's just are they going to go out and do it?
Right. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number 2. Don't forget, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of the hour, so come on in. It's time for you to join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan, 382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And, anything on your mind sports-wise? Auburn baseball about 20 minutes away from the pregame over on Wings 94.3 as the Tigers will be taking on South Alabama over in Montgomery before they get ready to hit the road and go to Athens this weekend to take on a top-5 team. I believe they're ranked as high as number 3 in the country in the Georgia Bulldogs. While Auburn basketball is playing not far away in Atlanta against Michigan.
The baseball team was able to go to the Creighton game.
Yes, they were.
Which I thought
apparently,
was really cool.
I mean, and apparently they just made it because that ball game lasted about 4 hours.
Did you hear the post game there where it was Butch mentioned that he had to keep it quick on the post game because they all wanted to get home, get showered, and get.
Oh
to
yeah,
the
I did hear that. As like, a matter of fact,
he did not have a ton of time.
We were still building. We were still building the playhouse, which did get done, by the way. But we're listening to that post game as they got Butch. That's exactly what he said. They needed to get showered so they could get. That's the first I'd heard about them going.
Yeah.
To the game, so that had to really be cool. They'd already wrapped up the series and they got to go over and watch Auburn basketball.
What a start to conference play. For this team, especially
and get off to that 4-2 start and win a road series.
Yeah, knocking on the door of the top 10 in some polls.
Yep.
Right. I mean, this is a. It's quite the start and quite the contrast to the way things went last year in SEC play. Like this is, you know, what a job Butch has done getting this group to rebound from what had to be a terribly disappointing conference season last year and make the right adjustments, keep the right players in the fold, right? Because a lot of these guys went through this last year, and I would wonder, Bill, if in an era where it's almost like passé to develop players because you don't know where they're going to be a year from now. Like you want the sure thing. Like I wonder how much of Auburn's struggles last year are paying off. Like you're paying dividends now because Cade Ballou got those at bats instead of a veteran player. Ike has gotten Ike's a super talent, but he's gotten a lot of at bats.
Derek Fabian.
Like there are young players.
He struggled some last year. I think the hopes were they weren't just star-crossed, far-fetched. I think Auburn was close last year, but things just didn't, they just didn't click. They didn't fall into place. And we had somebody asking about that a little yesterday.
And there's been a lot of turnover in the bullpen, right? You think about this year, last year.
But thus far this year, I mean, you sort of can feel it. They know. And like Andy was saying, winning their last couple of series last year, maybe that really did help them, knowing they can get out there and do that. Last year, they came close and lost an awful lot of times. This year, they've won a lot of close ball games.
This is a big test because if you can win,
you can win a game in Athens. I mean, you do everything you can. I mean, the good thing is you've got Sam Dutton, who's pitched really well. Opening things up Friday, but this Georgia team can mash. They really, really can. And Auburn can really hit it, too. I mean, Sunday, apparently the wind made it impossible for anything to carry out, and Auburn hit a lot of fly balls that turned into outs. But they've got a shot against Georgia. I think they'll go in, give it their best shot. If they can come out with a win and come home 5-4 after the first 3 weekends, including 2 series on the road – Then they're in good shape.
You get the sense they're pretty happy with Friday and Saturday starters. I would wonder if Chatterton continues.
Well, he's been really in 3 conference series. He struggled. He was good. He struggled.
So he's due.
We'll see. Andreas Alvarez, who was a midweek starter, he came in and threw 3 or 4 innings of 1-hit ball on Saturday. I think he's probably getting close to getting a look as a starter on the weekend. So we'll see. The good thing is they have some options.
They do.
They have some options there. But baseball.
And they have a guy they feel like they know is starting Friday.
Yeah,
for the foreseeable future, which was also kind of an adventure last year. Cycling guys around.
Oh yeah. So that'll be fun, baseball wise as well. But baseball, coming up about 15 minutes over on Wings. A 94-3. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company going to join us. We will get his thoughts on the Sweet 16, the SEC dominating the NCAA basketball tournament pretty much as I would guess, as expected. I mean, they haven't had to pull a lot of upsets to have 7 teams in the Sweet 16. So we'll check in with Jake on the other side. Stick with us. Here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 106.3. 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final half hour here on this Tuesday afternoon with Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to The Drive hotline and welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest, and that is Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Man, going good. Just hoping Auburn can build off that game against Creighton and get back to the Elite Eight for the first time since 2019.
Well, we were just saying as we were going to the break, I mean, the SEC has really dominated this NCAA tournament with a record seven teams in the Sweet 16. Auburn has played 9 of the other 15 teams, and they have 9 wins against the other 15 teams here in the Sweet 16. Of course, it doesn't matter what they've done up until this point. It's from this point on, but it was really encouraging to see after the it was much more than a scolding after the fire from Stephen Pearl and apparently Bruce in the locker room and Dylan Cardwell that they played like some parts of them were on fire. Much more so in the game against Creighton.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, even in the first half when Creighton was making shots,
right,
you could just see the energy level and the defensive intensity. It looked like, you know, the team that went out and won Maui. It looked like the team that we saw for 85% of the SEC regular season and the regular season overall. You know, after losing to Yale last year in the NCAA tournament, it just still surprised me that it took that type of verbiage from the coaches and from the leaders to go out there and play with maniacal effort. That just, you know, with an older team, too. But at the end of the day, you're in the Sweet 16, and I think if Auburn goes out and plays with that type of effort and intensity, they can win the whole thing. But you shouldn't even have to ask for that, especially in the NCAA tournament. But again, you know, it's here now, and they advance.
Looking at the Sweet 16 matchups that are going to get started on Thursday and lead into Friday, you've got 4 SEC teams that were on that 1 or 2 line when the bracket was unveiled. All 4 of them have advanced to this round. Looking at their opponents in this game, Florida's got Maryland, Tennessee's got Kentucky, Alabama is playing. Who did Alabama draw? Alabama's got
BYU.
BYU. That's right. Of those 3, is there an SEC team that you think is in real trouble in real position to face the end of the line?
Well, the easy answer is in the Kentucky Tennessee game, but
yeah.
That's not till Friday. Now, look,
you can pick Tennessee. You can pick Tennessee, Kentucky. Is there a reason why you feel like they're in? Like, is there a reason why you feel like that's the easy answer?
Well, I think Tennessee's playing their best ball of the year right now, and it's really, really hard to, you know, it's not that it's hard to beat a team 3 times. It's hard to beat a really good team 3 times, and that's what Tennessee is. But as far as the Thursday slate, you know, it's easy to sit here and say Arkansas, you know, against Texas Tech, but they're only a 5.5-point dog, and if they get a Deuce Arrow back, I think they could really cause some problems for Texas Tech with their athleticism. But this BYU-Alabama game, man, the over's at 175.5. They play the exact same offensively, but defensively they're totally different. You know, BYU allows you to shoot 3s. They're ranked nearly in the bottom of the amount of 3s given up, at least shot attempts per game, in all of college basketball. And, you know, Alabama's the exact opposite. They're going to try and run you off the 3-point line defensively. So I'm really interested in what Kevin Young, the BYU coach, if he's going to stick with what they've done all year on defense and say this Alabama team's a good 3-point shooting team, but they're not what they've been in the past, because I would not be shocked at all if you looked up and there were 75-83 shot in this game.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's that we see that you see it more and more throughout, but I mean, that one, yeah, that one's got a chance to be something crazy. I mean, you look, and this has been, for the most part, There haven't been, you know, the crazy upsets, the wild buzzer beaters. I mean, we've had a few games decided in the last few seconds, but it's been chalk for the most part. I mean, Arkansas is your only seed below a six. You've got 4-1 seeds, 3-2 seeds, 2-3 seeds, and 3-4 seeds. I mean, it's a 5-2-6s and a 10. It's crazy to see, you know, this many high seeds here in the Sweet 16.
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the previous tournaments, we were due for this. Like, we've had, I mean, you look, I mean, even going back to last year, the year before that, you know, with FAU and some of these teams, I mean, we were kind of due for a chalky year. And for the people that say, oh, well, NIL is ruining the Cinderella, well, NIL didn't just start this year. We've had it for a while now, and we've still had Cinderella. I mean, we had St. Peter's make it all the way to the Elite Eight. We had Oakland beat Kentucky. We had James Madison beat Wisconsin. We saw FAU make a run to the Final Four, all while NIL was still prevalent. I would argue if you're going to blame anything for the lack of parity this year, I'd blame the transfer portal more than NIL. And I know they kind of mix, and a lot of transfers decide to go places because of NIL. But I think we were just due for a chalky year, man. It's the way it works out sometimes.
I think both things can be true. Like, we probably are due for a chalky year based on just the way the Yahtzee dice sort of go. But at the same time, it probably is tougher than ever before to build and sustain something at the mid-major level, and it feels like it's not just about competing with these teams when you get into the NCAA. It's about getting in to the NCAA tournament too, because that's tougher than ever before at the mid-major level. So, and I don't think we're ever going to revert to an era that prioritizes the mid-major over the major conferences in these situations. But I also think, like, boy, it does seem like the conditions moving forward don't seem terribly favorable for a mid-major to make a serious Cinderella run in the tournament where they're consistently beating places with more resources.
Well, I mean, I, you know, Dan, and
that probably wasn't true, and that was true before NIL too, Jake. Like,
like, I mean, I didn't know we lived in this world where it was just easy for the mid-majors to run through these big guys. Look, I think it's hard to sustain rosters at the highest level now with the transfer portal, even for some of the big dogs, and it is harder for mid-majors, but that's why you're a mid-major. It is more difficult, but you still have access. You win your conference tournament, you can get in. You look at what we do in college football, you know, allowing that fifth team to automatically be in there. So as long as you have the access, I think you've got the opportunity. But, you know, again, what I find fascinating is, you know, you have some people that say, oh, well, this is no fun because there's no Cinderellas. Yet they also complain when the Cinderella makes a run and then gets murdered in the Elite Eight. Like, and then they get upset there's not all these great games. I'm looking at these Sweet 16 matchups. Man, there are some incredible games that we're going to get out of this.
Yeah, what's great is when you look and there are no double-digit favorites or underdogs, obviously, in the Sweet 16.
You can, Jake, miss me with the idea that the tournament, like the 4 days we've gotten, the product, like, it's been awesome. Like, I think, even without a lot of mid-major Cinderella storylines to follow, I mean, this tournament has been fantastic through, and the culmination of that was some of the stuff we got on Saturday and Sunday, right? Like the Maryland buzzer beater, mm-hmm. and which might have been a travel. I don't know, Jake, but it's. I mean, it, you know, who knows? How does Derek Queen not have a DQ NIL deal?
For
right,
sure.
You know, the Blizzard. You know, how's that not go with my man Derek Queen? But it's. I think despite the lack of those sort of Cinderellas, it's still been a. And maybe the two things aren't related as far as the overall quality of the tournament, because we've had some fantastic games in the first 4 days of this March Madness.
Oh, we have. I mean, you haven't had a ton of blowouts either. I mean, most of these games have come down to the last 5 to 7 minutes where these teams are still in it. So, I mean, you look at the views, they're shattering records for what we've had even in March Madness before this. So, you know, look, at the end of the day, when you're watching a Batman movie, you didn't pay to see Robin fight everybody. You want to see Batman fight. And that's what we're getting right now. You've got all your top seeds that have moved on, and that's just going to create this absolute grind of awesomeness and these matchups, some we've seen during the year a little bit, like obviously Kentucky and Tennessee, some we haven't seen, like Auburn and Michigan. So I'm here for it, and, you know, again, at the end of the day, I want great games. That's what I want. I don't care who's playing in it. I just want it to be a great game, and I think we're going to get a lot of them.
Seven SEC teams in the Sweet 16. Six, I mean, there's a chance there could be six in the Elite Eight. Who is the – I mean, obviously
– Ole Miss is one we haven't really talked about.
No, we haven't.
Ole Miss and Izzo.
Well, I mean, look, if you get six out of the eight in the Elite Eight, I mean, can we just call it the SEC Tournament Part 2?
Right.
I mean, that's really kind of what it turns into. But, yeah, as far as Ole Miss, you know, a lot of people are talking about Arkansas and Calipari, and I get it. That turnaround's been fantastic. I think they got a decent shot to beat Texas Tech.
I do, too.
But, man, Ole Miss, I mean, and they're doing this without a big guy. I hope everybody realizes this. Like, they're not doing this with, you know, being deep in the front court. They're just making shots. They're hot right now. And when you got guys like Padula and you got Brakefield, I mean, Ole Miss has got more experience than Auburn when you look at years. Like, just think about that for a second. What Malik Diaz has done coming over from Belmont. We'll see what happens, you know, against Michigan State. But, guys, I look at that matchup, and I'm like, Michigan State's one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country when it comes down to it. And they defend really well, and they rebound really well. But if Ole Miss keeps humming like this on offense, they could beat Michigan State.
Well, if that happens, and as you said, I mean, Arkansas definitely has a shot. I mean, getting Boogie back, they're just playing so much better now. I mean, they had – you know, they had a situation where they had a bunch of guys that hadn't played together for the most part, except for the guys that were with Cal at Kentucky coming in, got off to that 0-5 start in conference, and their team nobody's wanted to see, and this is why, as here they are. They may be a 10 seed, but they don't have 10 seed talent.
No, not at all. And if you look at some of the higher seeds, I mean, I'll be honest with you, and you can call it bias or whatever, I think Alabama got a better path than any of the one seeds to the Elite Eight. I mean, you look, Duke has to play Baylor or Mississippi State. Auburn's got to play Creighton or Louisville in Lexington. You look at Houston having to run up against Gonzaga in the second round, and meanwhile, Bama gets to play all these church campers. We just need our AD on the committee. That's what we need. Can John Cohen just get on the committee? Because every time Bama gets in, they just give him a yellow brick road right to at least the Sweet 16. And we'll see against BYU. But no, man, Arkansas, they're scrappy. You know, watching them and St. John's play each other, it was funny. The pace of that game was insane, but the shot-making wasn't. They were running up and down like teams that score 90 points a game. And rarely could anybody hit a jump shot. But they fight. Their roles are defined now. I was interested to see how they were going to be when Boogie Flan came back after that injury. And they're confident. They're playing with house money.
I mean, I would agree Bama probably has the easiest matchup of the four teams that are playing, but that's also because Bama's playing a team that pulled off an upset, right?
Like, yeah, BYU's but they have had Robert Morris and St. Mary's in the first two games.
Yeah, but the first two rounds.
Yeah, but St. Mary's earned their spot as a seven on the ball. Like, I mean, it was
Dan, like, Creighton's a nine?
Like, yeah, no, I mean,
like
no.
Louisville's an eight.
Well, I mean, I didn't hate where St. Mary's was seated on the field. Like, I mean, they were Bama's a terrible matchup for them, but they, I mean, St. Mary's probably earned their spot and won the game against Vanderbilt. But you're right; it does seem like it's a favorable now. What do you? Because we're not going to talk to you until we have a Final Four,
right?
Like, what do you think if? I mean, you look and what if you want to go like if chalk holds, like if you get an Auburn Michigan State game, if you get a, because I want to know, like, if it's Bama Duke in the Elite Eight, what do you think of that matchup, Jake?
God, I think, you know, coming into this tournament, I was like, Florida's playing the best, but you look at Duke right now, I mean, golly, and everybody talks about their offense, but it's their length defensively. And their ability to move their feet, they're good at everything. Florida is too. Auburn is too. Alabama is too. I've got Duke coming out of that one. I've got all the one seeds advancing to the Final Four, except I've got Tennessee beating Houston.
All right. I had Tennessee over Houston as well.
So three SEC teams in Duke is the Final Four you're thinking?
That sounds reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, it's not all that great. That's three ones and a two if you deliver that one.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I don't know about y'all. How surprised were y'all by that Florida-UConn game? Like, did that one kind of catch y'all off guard that it was that close? It didn't shock me as much. But, man, UConn hung on the glass way better than I thought they would.
I don't think anybody on the one line or the two line wanted UConn as a potential round of 32 matchup because of the belief that that team has more skill than your average 8 or 9.
See, I think it's probably
kind of like Arkansas being a 10. Like, they're a 10 and they deserve to be a 10, but they aren't a team that anybody wanted to see in the first weekend of the tournament. And for Duke and Tennessee, like, Duke would have to snap the I don't know if a Coach K assistant like has, you know, maybe it would be the first Final Four for there's a stigma there to break. And then Rick Barnes, right? It would be his first Final Four if he can take Tennessee there all the way.
Yeah, man, I just think Tennessee's playing so good right now. And you know, I think this team is a little bit different because and I think Jordan Gainey's been a huge part of it. I mean, everybody talks about Ziegler, and I get it, and Chaz Lanier, and I get it. But Tennessee used to lose games in the NCAA tournament because they'd go through these lulls in scoring. But it seems like Jordan Gainey is always the guy who gets them through the lulls, even if it's a mid-range jump shot. So I think this is the most dangerous offensive Tennessee team with that same old defensive pedigree that they have. And that's what they've been missing, and that's what they've needed to break through.
Great stuff, as always, Jake. I mean, it is a such a fun time of year with so many different things going on. But obviously, March Madness is at the forefront of this. Let everybody know what you've got going and how, of course, they can grab it every day.
Yeah, man, really easy. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N & Company. We're all on audio, all on video, YouTube, Roku, all that stuff. I got a really, really deep Auburn, Michigan preview. You can find it on our YouTube channel and everywhere. And look, we're talking about it all tomorrow, and we're actually going to live stream because, you know, one of my co-hosts played quarterback at Michigan, and obviously I'm an Auburn fan, so we're going to live stream the game from a cigar bar Friday night. So that may be the last time y'all ever see me in sports media, depending on what happens. So I want to check that out. Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, good luck to you, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Hopefully we talk to you again next week.
Have a good time, bud.
Hey, hope so. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, Jake Crane joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We need to get to our final break of the show. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive. Experience.